Okay, thank you very much. So first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me opportunity to present our result in this very nice workshop. And today I just want to talk about some exotic nodal fermions studied by our ARPES technique. And okay, so these are the collaborators. So they are the ARPES group in our laboratory. And we also collaborate with some synchrotron group in Japan and also in the Diamond in UK. And the key player of this work is the two PhD student. One is this Chi Tran. She already graduated very recently, and she go to the Australia. And the other is Dr. Daichi Takane, who is in the second grade student of the doctor course. And we also receive samples from the Segawa in Kyoto Sangyo University, and also the Yoichi Ando group in the University of Keren. And we also ask the bond structure calculation to the Oguchi sensei in the Osaka University. I just want to briefly advertise, we are always publishing this ARPES calendar every year. And you can just still use 2 months for this year. So yeah, anyway, we will update the 2020 in the early January. So yeah, please access to this website if you are interested. Okay, so today, this is the content of my talk. So I just first briefly mention about the bond engineering of topological insulators and the topological semi-metals. And today I want to divide my talk to the two different parts. And the first is about topological semi-metals. And of course, we know there are several different types of topological semi-metals, like a Dirac semi-metal and a Wahl semi-metal. And today I just want to focus mainly on the new types of semi-metals, like a line node semi-metals. And also we have recently discovered new types of the nodal fermions. So if I have time, I just want to talk about such new types of Dirac fermions. And in the second part, I just want to talk about the superconducting nodal fermions, which we discovered in the new this lead film on top of this new topological insulator, sarin bismuth. Selenium 2, and I will summarize my talk. Okay, so I think I'm the first guy to talk about the ARPES, so I just want to briefly mention what is ARPES. Of course, I think you already know, but ARPES is a really simple technique to directly determine the electron structure of solids. So we shine like ultraviolet or soft X-ray light to the sample surface, and we detect photoelectrons emitted from the sample surface. And this electron has information of the inside the solid. That is very important point. And by using this simple energy and momentum conservation, we can directly determine the bond structure of solids. And what is important for this ARPES is it's really surface sensitive. It's just see the like a 10 angstrom from the top surface. It's really surface sensitive, like in the case of STM. And also, we can combine the spin-resolved ARPES to just directly visualize the electron states of the surface. And what is powerful and is what is really good for this ARPES technique is we can basically directly determine the Dirac cone surface state, for example, in the case of three-dimensional topological insulators, by specifying the actual spin texture, which strongly depends on the momentum. And we have developed so many different types of ARPES system for more than 20 years. And these are equipped in our laboratory. And these tools are in the now the spin-resolved system. OK, so this is the basic concept to find new types of topological material. So this is just a conventional topological insulator where we have a Dirac cone surface state within the bond gap. And if we control this Dirac cone, for example, if we break the time reversal symmetry, we can open up the gap at the Dirac point. And with this gapped Dirac cone, we can it's really useful for realizing some exotic topological phenomena, for example, like a topological magnetic electric effect, or quantum, anomalous quantum Hall effect. So we have been working on this bond engineering of the topological insulator for after the discovery of the topological insulator about 10 years ago. And this is kind of a summary of our activity for this topological, just for topological iterator. So about 8 years ago, we performed the experiment on this silane bismuth sulfur selenium system. And we found this Dirac cone, the gap at the Dirac cone can be easily manipulated by controlling this sulfur and selenium content, which I will explain later in more detail. And we could even control the carrier type of the Dirac fermions by keeping the bulk insulating. This is like a kind of extended topological insulator. It's a topological crystalline insulator. So we found this tinteroride is indeed a type of new type of topological crystalline insulator. But today I don't want to focus on this topological insulator, but instead of topological insulator, I just want to go to the semi-metal phase. So I think the simplest way to realize this Dirac metal is just to control the topological phase and the non-topological phase. So this is the ordinary insulator and this is the topological insulator. So if we want to connect these two different types of insulators, we should close the gap at this topological quantum phase transition point. So at this point, we can realize a gapless bulk metallic state, and that is called the Dirac metal, where we have a dispersion, linear dispersion in all the momentum kx, ky, and kz. So it's called the three-dimensional Dirac metal, which can be compared with the graphene having a two-dimensional linear dispersion. So why this is interesting? Because it can have a lot of exotic physical properties, for example, like a very high mobility in bulk or some large diamagnetism. So to find this Dirac metal phase itself is a kind of very important task in this topological business. And of course, the way to realize 3D Dirac metals is to combine the topological insulator and the ordinary insulator. So we found that this system is really good, because in the case of silane bismuth selenide, we can see this kind of X-shaped Dirac cone. So this is nothing but the signature of the topological insulator. And if we just replace the selenium to the sulfur, then we see no Dirac cone state. So this means this is an ordinary insulator. And then if we combine this selenium and the sulfur, because this is like a complete solid solution system, so we can easily combine this selenium and sulfur. And then at x equals 0.5, we can realize this Dirac metal phase. And we indeed found this Dirac metal phase. But however, we have a problem, because if we are slightly off from the 0.5 phase, we can easily open up the gap as a Dirac point. This is bulk, but this is contaminated by surface. But if you look at the bulk band gap, it once closes at this equal at 0.5. So yeah, but if we are a little bit away, like 0.49 or 0.51, we have a gap at the Dirac point. So in that case, it's not protected in this case. But what we need is a protected Dirac cone. So by using this method, we cannot get this protected Dirac cone. So then how to achieve this protected Dirac cone? So then we should utilize the symmetry of the crystal. So of course, the topological insulator is protected by time reversal symmetry, but we are thinking about the crystal symmetry. So in our case, of course, crystal has a point group, refraction, rotation, inversion. And of course, we are using the periodic crystal, so we have a translational symmetry. So when we combine this point group and the translation, we have two different types of non-symorphic symmetries. One is the grind mirror, and the other is the screw. So by combining all of these symmetries, we can realize new types of the topological semi-metals. And the one very famous example is the to utilize rotational symmetry in the case of a very famous sodium silicate bismuth and the cadmium arsenic. They have a rotational axis on this direction, C3 and C4. And when they measure transport, they realize a very high mobility. This is the case of the cadmium arsenic. And if we make a thin film of cadmium arsenic, they can open up the gap at the Dirac point, and that can lead to the quantum Hall effect. This has been done by the Kawasaki group in Japan. And for the wire, I don't talk about the detail about the wire, but if we break the time reversal and the inversion, we can realize we can split this for the degenerate Dirac cone to the doubly degenerate Dirac point, like here. And in the case of Wallerstein metal, what is very interesting is we have a, like a surface, Fermionic surface state on the projected, which connects the projected wire points. And what is interesting for this wire is, of course, we have a, like a chiral anomaly, and we, yeah, it should be, it should produce some exergic transport properties. And so far, the experiment for the Alpes point of view has been done intensively on not on the magnetic Wallerstein metal, but on the non-central symmetric, space inversion symmetry broken Wallerstein metal. And the more, I think the most famous example is this tantalum arsenic series. So this is from the Princeton group. So they could clearly see this wire cone in the bulk. And at the surface, they could see that this fermionic surface state. So I think this Wallerstein metal is basically established by Alpes. So then what is the next step? So just today, I just want to emphasize a new type of Dirac cemetery, the topological cemetery, that is a line node cemetery. So the difference between the Dirac wire and this line node is very simple. So in the case of Dirac and wire, we have a point node. So we have only discrete point in the K-space, which has a degeneracy. But in the case of line node, this the node extend one dimensionally in K space, and sometimes it forms a loop, and sometimes it is like a disconnected line. So this line node symmetry can be interesting because it will also produce some different physical properties. Like this is just all the theoretical prediction, like around the Flatland level or Kondo effect. So what was the task for the Alpes people? Is to find some new types of line nodes and metal. And actually there are basically the three different guidelines to realize these line nodes. And one is to use, because line node is like it's a one-dimensional loop, so we need not a mirror refraction, basically mirror refraction. And also that sometimes we can use non-symmorphic symmetry. In this case, a glide mirror symmetry. So it's involved with the mirror symmetry. And the last is to use a time reversal and inversion with the negligible spin orbit coupling case. And we found a good example for each of these possibilities. And for the mirror refraction, we have recently found new compound. It's a calcium silver arsenic where we have a mirror plane just around here. And by using this mirror refraction, we can have a band touching between the silver conduction band and the host fluorosulfur arsenic valence band. So we could indeed visualize this, the silver band and also the arsenic band here. And in addition, we could see this kind of Fermi torus. So we established that this material is indeed new types of line nodes and metal. And we can, of course, utilize this non-symmorphic symmetry. And there are many different types of non-symmorphic symmetry protected line nodes and metal. And my famous example is the zirconium silicon sulfur. This is a layer compound, which has identical structure with the 111 type iron superconductors. And this is the first report from SHUP, so they could see this kind of diamond frame surface. And we extend the measurement to the several different types of nodal line semi-metal candidate, like hafnium silicon sulfur or zirconium germanium chalcogenide. And in all these materials, we commonly could see this kind of the line node. So we established that all of these systems are non-symmorphic symmetry protected the line nodes and metals. And I think this is like a little bit too specific, so I don't want to talk about much more detail. So, and we also found this kind of a very specific materials. It's also the has our this line node protected by the glide mirror symmetry. And then this is also the very useful technique to find out the line nodes in metal. And one famous example I just want to emphasize is this MgBT material. Of course, MgBT is really famous because it has a very high superconducting transient temperature up to the 39K. And we measure the cousin material is aluminum B2, which has just one additional electrons in the unit cell compared to the MgB2. And we could visualize band dispersion in the three-dimensional Brillouin zone. And we could also see this kind of X-shaped band. And we could eventually visualize this kind of line node. And what is very interesting in this system is if in the MGB2 case, the Fermi level is somewhere here, so we expect that superconducting properties of MGB2 is strongly influenced by this line of properties. But of course, we don't know whether it's topological or not, so we need some additional studies for this MGB2 type material. And okay, so and the more recently, there are several proposals to find the beyond the Dirac and Wallis and metal material. One is to utilize the non-symmorphic symmetry, such as maybe twisted surface states or hourglass fermions. But the theory is extending a lot. And they now they are dealing with all the space groups in the solid. We have like 230 space groups. And they found in some specific space group, for example, in the 206 and 230, they have a very peculiar nodal fermions, like a six-fold nodal fermions, where we have a Dirac one plus a flat one here. And the other type is eight-fold nodal fermions in the space group 130 and 135. So to find this kind of new nodal fermions is a very recent task for the ALPES. And we focused on this cobalt silicide. This is a B20 compound that it's a really old material. And the Xu Chen-Zhang group has been predicted that this material could have due to chiral structure, they suggested this material can host spin one chiral fermion and also the double wire fermion at the gamma point, at the R point respectively. And we actually measured this system by very carefully by using the synchrotron. And we indeed found this kind of spin one chiral fermion at the gamma point and also the double wire fermion at the R point. So we established experimentally for the first time that this cobalt silicon indeed has a new types of the nodal fermions, such as spin one and double wire fermions. And in addition, actually, we also found the fermionic surface state connecting this gamma point, spin one, and R point wire. So this firmly establishes that there are new types of the chiral fermions in the solid. So I think I still have time, 10 minutes. So I just want to go to the second topic, that is our new result on the possible new topological superconductor candidate. So I think I can mostly skip. So what's the difference between the topological insulator and the topological superconductor? It's basically, in this topological insulator, we have a bulk band gap. But in this case, instead of the bulk band gap, we have a superconducting gap. And what is very interesting for this topological superconductor is it can host Majorana fermions. And in the case of 3D topological superconductor, we can realize Majorana cone on the surface. And in the 2D topological superconductor, we will have a Majorana edge mode. And when we apply the vortex perpendicular to this plane, we can realize a Majorana bound state at the vortex core. Or in the case of one-dimensional topological superconductor, we can realize a bound state at the edge state at the end of this wire. So to realize a superconductor, topological superconductor hosting this Majorana state is really important task for the study, for the topological fields. And so far, we have performed several ALPES. Of course, ALPES is not so powerful to directly access to the Majorana because it's like a local state. So instead of seeing directly the Majorana, we are exploring new types of possible topological superconductor candidates. And so far, we have studied several bulk materials, starting from the very famous kappa bismuth selenium. And this is a doped topological crystalline insulator, and this is a doped topological superlattice. And we are extending the measurement to the possible two-dimensional topological superconductors, such as this is a whole doped bismuth tellurium bulk. And also, this is a one-dimensional wire, quasi-one-dimensional materials. It's a cyan molybdenum selenium. But more recently, we are fabricating by using the molecular beam epitaxy, the several different types of hybrids. And these are our recent studies. And the one is like iron telluride is non-superconducting, and the bismuth telluride, this is also non-superconducting. But if we make a hybrid of this system, this becomes superconducting. And we suspect this superconducting system can be a topological superconductor. And the other system is like a high TC, possibly high TC topological superconductor, which is a junction with the bismuth 110 and the bismuth 2212. But today, I don't have time to talk about these two topics, but I just want to focus on this, our recent results on the lead on top of the topological insulator, so which we discovered some very interesting thing. Okay, so how to realize topological superconductor? So one typical way to realize topological superconductor is to find a bulk P-wave superconductor. And the famous example, although it is still debated, is copper bismuth selenium and strontium lucenate. But you know that the P-wave bulk superconductor is rare in nature because most of the superconductors are BCS type. So yeah, we need to find some alternative method. So instead of finding a bulk topological superconductor, we can utilize a hybrid system. It's a heterostructure. So in this case, we can combine this S-wave conventional superconductor and strong spin-orbit copper material. This can be, sometimes this can be like just a topological insulator surface or interface. And the other case is a Lashba surface state with the Zeeman splitting. So if Fermi level is here, we can have a putative Dirac surface state in this case. So far, there are several attempts to realize this topological superconductor in the spectroscopic point of view. So this is just an example on the niobium diselenide superconductor and the bismuth selenium. So they could indeed see by STM the superconducting proximity effect induced superconducting gap. And this is bismuth selenium on niobium. So this is ARPES result. So they could see the superconducting proximity induced superconducting gap in this case. So, but it's still, the Majorana is still elusive in these systems. So I think there are some reason for that. So one reason I think is this is the following. So usually to see the Majorana, we need to use a spectroscopy technique in many cases. And in these systems, the topological insulator has a thickness of 6 nanometer. Then you know that the superconducting proximity effect strongly occurs at the interface. Then we need access to the interface, but this spectroscopy technique is really surface sensitive. So we cannot, in principle, directly access to the interface. But if you make a thinner film, of course we can, we have a chance to access to the interface. But you know, if we make a thinner topological insulator, it's not a topological insulator because of the hybridization of the top surface and the bottom surface. It cannot be 3D TI. So it's non-TI, unfortunately. Then our strategy is the following. So we just replace the superconductor and the non-TI. So we fabricate very thin superconductor on top of the topological insulator. So if we find a atomic layer superconductor, we can access to the surface or interface. But what we found in our study is even when the superconductor is thick, we can realize topological superconductivity. That's very interesting. And as a platform, we have chosen sarin bismuth selenium as a topological insulator, which we discovered by ourselves. And for the superconductor film, we use a lead, simple lead, elemental lead. And why we use this material is because if we go to the very thin side, lead can still keep the superconducting state even up down to the 2-monolayer. 2-monolayer is a 6 angstrom thick. So this has to be a very, very useful platform. But so far, nobody have realized this combination. Nobody have succeeded in fabricating this combination of the material. And we tried the MB on this material and we fabricated 100 samples. And eventually we could epitaxially grow the lead thin film on top of the styrene bismuth selenium. This is it's a little bit of detail, so I just want to skip that. But what is important is the lattice constant of this lead is very similar to that of bark. And this styrene bismuth selenium has a lattice constant of 4.24. Meaning that we have a very large incommensurate lattice mismatch between the lead and the sodium bismuth selenium too. But anyway, we could fabricate a lead thin crystal on top of the topological insulator for the first time. And then, okay, let's look at the data. And this is the pristine sodium bismuth selenium too. This is just a topological insulator. So we see the valence band and the conduction band. Because of the selenium deficiency, we can see the conduction band because bulk is metal in this case, but we don't care much about the conductivity of bulk. And if you look carefully at the data here, we can clearly see the Dirac-Kohn band as expected. And then we deposit lead on top of the, this sodium bismuth selenium. Then you can see the band structure totally changed. You can see clearly the several M-shaped band as here and here and here, which is completely absent in this pristine sodium bismuth selenium too. And if we compare with the lead film on top of silicon, we can clearly see very similar band structure. So we can safely conclude that this M-shaped band is purely coming from the lead, but not from the TBS. Then what is interesting here, and if you look at carefully the data, near the Fermi level, we can see the some small difference. Here we have something, but here we have almost nothing. So we performed the high resolution Alpes measurement in the vicinity of the Fermi level and find a very exciting result. And this is, again, the pristine sodium bismuth selenium. So we have a Dirac-Kohn. This is lead on top of TBS. Then we can see Dirac-Kohn-like feature near the Fermi level. This is actually unexpected. Anyway, so when we measure, because in the case of a freestanding lead film, we see nothing here. So this is, exactly looks like the Dirac-Kohn. And indeed, when we measure the lead on top of silicon, we see no Dirac-Kohn surface state. So this looks like it's coming from the sodium bismuth selenium. But what is surprising here, this 70 monolayer corresponds to the 50 angstrom. So it's much larger than the escape depth of the photoelectrons. So the situation is the following. So we have a, like a 50 angstrom thick lead, and we have like a 10 angstrom escape depth. So usually it's impossible to see the, this interface topological surface state, topological interface state, because it's buried in the interface. But in, even in this case, we could see the Dirac-Kohn here. So one possibility is that, do we have time? I think I have time, okay. So one possibility is we the, like film is inhomogeneous, and we see the both like bare TBS surface and the lead surface. But this we can clearly deny this possibility because we see the hybridization between the Dirac-Kohn surface, Dirac-Kohn state, and the lead film. And so the situation is not like this, but situation is like this. So after attaching the TBS and the lead, what we found is this Dirac-Kohn state at, located at the interface migrate to the top surface after the, making the head structure. This is actually surprising for us. And we confirmed this picture by the several different experimental result. And so I just want to explain more detail. So if this is lead has this kind of band dispersion. It's just a quantum wave state. And this TBS is this kind of dispersion. So if we just mix this dispersion, we will have this kind of band. But in the real case, we have a, like, a very strong hybridization between the quantum wave states of lead and also the sodium bismuth selenium. And such a strong hybridization is a signature of the so-called topological proximity effect, which we have discovered a few years ago in the different combination. In this case, we fabricated bismuth on top of sodium bismuth selenium too, and we found that Dirac-Kohn migrate to the, from the interface to the top surface. So what we found is that the, after attaching the lead film, the Dirac-Kohn can move in real space from the interface to the surface. And then the, what is interesting is, of course, about the superconducting property of this system. So whether this hybrid system can still be superconducting or not, and can it be topological superconductor or not? That to address this essential question, we performed the Alpes in the very low temperature because we can access below TC in this red film. And we start from the relatively thick film. So this is like a 22 monolayer. It's a 60 angstrom film. So at the low temperature on the lead-derived Fermi surface, we can clearly see the pileup in the density of the states. And this is nothing but the signature of the superconducting gap opening. And this superconducting gap completely closes at above the bulk Tc of the lead. And actually, when we compare the data with the bulk lead, we can see the very good similarity. The gap size is also very similar. So our film actually has a Tc as high as that of the bulk Tc. Then we go to the thinner film. Okay, so let's go to the 70 monolayer film. And again, we measure the superconducting gap on this lead-derived Fermi surface. Then we can clearly see the gap opening. This is expected, of course. And then we measure the data on the migrated topological surface state. Then what is surprising is we again see the superconducting gap of about 1 mEV. So it's comparable to the gap of the lead-derived Fermi surface. And then we measure the momentum dependence on this Fermi surface, and we found it's isotropic. So it's basically the S-wave. And of course, we confirm that the bare thallium bismuth selenium does not have a superconducting gap by carefully measuring the data on the bare surface. So we see no superconducting gap in this system. So we can safely conclude that the superconducting gap indeed opened in this migrated topological surface state. So what is the consequence of our result? So what I want to emphasize is that this system actually satisfies the condition proposed by the Fouquet, where we have a gapped helical Dirac fermions. So this can be a two-dimensional topological superconductor, but that is not too surprising for us. So what I want to emphasize here is in the conventional point of view, the topological insulator is here and the superconductor is here, and we have a topological surface state interface. I can finish by 2 minutes, sorry. Topological interface here. So when the superconductor is attached to here, then we have a, like a penetration of Cooper pairs to the interface topological state. Then we can realize a topological, two-dimensional topological superconductivity on the topological insulator side of the interface. But here, in our case, this topological interface migrates to the top of the lead surface. So this lead surface can become itself become a topological superconductor. So our message is that we can realize two-dimensional topological superconductor even without using the superconducting proximity effect. That is our first message. And then the second message, we can convert conventional superconductor to the topological superconductor by using the topological proximity effect. Okay, so time is up, so I just want to summarize my talk. In the beginning of my talk, I just want to I just show some example of the newly discovered topological line of same metals such as silver, calcium, silver, arsenic, and so on. And we reported new chiral fermions in this cobalt silicon material. On the latter part of my talk, I reported the lead first fabrication of lead on TBS, and we suggested that we can realize two-dimensional topological superconductor even without the superconducting proximity effect. Okay, this is the end of my talk, and thank you very much for your attention.
Just to clarify the last statement that you made.
Yeah.
So I was under the impression until, you know, basically your last slide, is that thallium bismuth diselenide is a regular 3D Ti.
Yes.
Then you put lead, which is superconducting on the surface, and
yes,
then following Fouquet scenario, you expect to see effectively P plus IP topological superconductor.
Exactly.
Right. But here you're somehow saying that no, you could do it without superconducting proximity. And yet it seems that lead is essential for this to work.
Yeah, actually we need a superconductor anyway. Yeah.
Right, but then
but the superconducting proximity effect, because this side, everybody believes that this side will become like this side will host the topological superconductivity. But in our case, we don't care whether we have a superconducting proximity effect, because this topological surface state to just migrate to the superconductor side.
Sorry, that's the energy on the vertical axis?
Oh, this is a real space, sorry. So it's a real space. This is the surface and this is below the surface. So it's nothing to do with the energy, but this is axis is a real space.
Right, and your statement is that because that superconducting state gets pushed to the boundary, it's not at the interface between
It's TI not at the interface, but on the surface, top surface.
Well, you can't see the interface.
We cannot
right,
see by our best.
Yeah.
So we don't know whether what is going on the interface, but from our result, because our ARPS is really surface sensitive, we can at least say this Dirac-Cohn is on the surface, but not on the interface.
So maybe you said, but I missed it. Actually, two questions. You said 50 angstroms, and it migrates to the surface.
Yes.
Do you have an upper limit on that number?
Okay, so actually we tried up to the 23 monolayer film. That means like 70 angstrom, but we still see that the Dirac-Cohn migrated.
Okay, so...
So we don't know the upper boundary because we didn't try the even thicker film, but at least it's 70.
So
yeah, okay.
My second question is, since we're sitting amongst a bunch of theorists, do you have an explanation for why this migrates?
There are several possible explanations because it's how to say why it migrate.
Because then you might be able to estimate the upper limit on the thickness of the lead.
What is very difficult for this system is this topological insulate and the lead film is completely incommensurate. It's like a 20% lattice mismatch. So we have tried to do some slab calculation, but we completely failed. Of course, it has to be reproduced by slab calculation if the lattice is commensurate. But unfortunately, it's really difficult so far to perform the calculation. So actually, it's really difficult for us to estimate the upper boundary by theory. But by experiment, of course, we can fabricate a thicker film to see whether we see the Dirac-Cohn or not.
Thank you.
Okay, more questions? You said that the band structure is mixed between the lead and the surface state.
Yes, yes.
But usually the surface state has a spin momentum locking.
Yeah.
So what happened in this case?
In this case, actually, we have a spin selective band hybridization. So if spin is the same, for example, this color is a spin texture. So the blue and the blue can hybridize. But blue and the lead has an opposite spin, so it cannot hybridize. So if we consider the spin configuration, we can completely understand the hybridization. So it's indeed explained in terms of the spin texture. So, thank you.
Well, actually, so in the case with a nodal line or nodal loop, semi-metal, so what is the generic edge state for that? What generation of the Fermi arc in that case?
That's a really difficult question for the line of semi-metal. And one common understanding is we have a drum head surface state within the line node. But it's not completely established. So we need to calculate some topological invariants such as the Zach phase, then we can guess where the surface state will be. But that cannot be Fermi arc. It's like continuous surface state. Because it's not a point node, but it's just
a
line node.
So should I say that the density of the zero energy states as the boundary should be as a finite measure of the Brillouin zone as boundary?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's thank the speaker again.
Okay.
And we will take a break. We'll come back at 10:50.